Hi, everyone. My name is Emily. I'm the membership and outreach coordinator here at WDRT, and I'm welcoming you to the first unofficial episode. We're calling it right now of the Volunteer Spotlight Series here at WDRT. And joining me today is Philothea Beeson. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. So this is fun because normally you're on the other side of the microphone.
I already made a mistake.
No, there are
So that's fun. It is different being interviewed.
It is. I know.
I know people have trepidation about that.
Are you feeling nervous?
Well, just kind of like, I don't know what you're going to ask me.
She has no idea what I'm going to ask her. Philothea is the host of Who's in the Kitchen, which airs Saturdays at noon. And today I have the pleasure of interviewing her. Normally she is interviewing various folks in the Driftless region, but we want to give our listeners a little more background on all of our amazing volunteers here. And Philothea is one of our longest running volunteers. So legend has it that you were here the first day we broadcast, or that you were the first voice to ever go out on the air back in 2010. Can you confirm or deny?
I will go with that, but I'm not really sure. But I was here the first week. I was one of the first shows, and maybe it ended up that my show was the first, but that isn't as dramatic as saying the first.
Well, that's okay. I mean, that's tremendous. You've been here now for then 13 years,
yes,
a part of WDRT.
Mm-hmm.
So why did you want to start a radio show? What interested you about WDRT and becoming a volunteer here?
Well, I was really recruited by our program director and founder, Jim Hallberg. And he knew me as a teacher and a tutor. And I don't know, we got this idea of having a round table, our little kitchen table, which we now have in our studio. And he had an idea that I could do an interview show. And he said he wanted me to do a cooking show. And I thought, well, you know, what am I going to do? Make sound effects? How do you do this on the radio?
Right.
I'm picturing Julia Child or something like
that.
Absolutely. But I'm not the world's greatest cook. But I love people, and I found it. I really love interviewing. I love having a pure hour of just listening to somebody and what they're interested in and what their passion is. And so I got the idea of the music from my husband and I play bluegrass music, and we love this song, Mama's in the Kitchen. And I thought, oh, I'll call this Who's in the Kitchen. And so Mama's in the Kitchen is still my theme song.
Awesome.
And I thought, well, this is going to be more about the people who are in the kitchen and their connection with food. I'm not making food here. Sometimes people bring in samples, though, and I've had lots of great samples of olive oil from Spain or, you know, just some really great drinks that, you know, somebody has made and brought in, or cookies or whatever.
I'm pretty sure I purchased some honey after one of your guests came, and he happened to have honey on hand.
Right. So they bring me samples, and then I can smack my lips and, you know, make sound effects.
Amazing.
So it wasn't really my idea. It was really Jim's. And I didn't, at first we thought, first it was a half-hour show. And then he said, well, are you willing to go for an hour? And I thought, I'll never fill up an hour. And when we started, we had a little segment, 10-minute segment at the end, which was with Kornstrom's Bakery. And Joyce Kornstrom was my special guest. And I went to her bakery every single week in Westby with my little recorder that I had been given. And between taking things out of the oven, we made a show for 10 minutes about Norwegian and Swedish baking. And so then after a while, we realized we don't need to have any extra. I mean, an hour is wonderful, and you really can go into depth. So now I have an hour-long show, and many shows racked up now for replaying.
That's right. Well, of all of those shows, I mean, it's been running for many years, so this might be difficult. But do you have a favorite moment or a favorite guest from over the years?
Well, one of the shows that really got the attention of my first viewers was a show I had. I was driving along the highway down to Boscobel, and I saw a giant pumpkin. And I went down a little back road and found the person who'd grown that pumpkin, and I asked him if he'd be on my show to talk about how to grow giant pumpkins. And I had a lot of children who were listening at the time. Some of them were my former students. And people just still remember the giant pumpkin show. It is pretty amazing. You see them sometimes on TV, but you wonder, how did people do this? But I've had some fun people that I've interviewed, and one was Monique Hooker was really a great French chef in this area, and she cooked for many wonderful events, and she did classes, and she started the farm-to-school program and had contests and between students and worked with chefs, and she was the busiest person, and yet whatever I asked her to be on a show with me, she just say yes. And I've had some people that have been on, you know, quite often, and they've been fun. Once we did the spirituality of food, and one of my listeners played it on he replayed it and put it on a farm show as kind of a syndicated thing, and you see how many hits you got and everything. And it was hundreds out of 100,000 people, I think, that was on that. There were about 100 hits, and a lot of them were really, they were really negative reacting, but the show was so great. I think, you know, I know we got the reputation of being, you know, maybe hippie back to the landers here, you know, and so that was, you know, I got an interesting reaction to that show.
Your first viral moment, you went viral.
We went viral. But I have had some fun shows. I've done a show with, now I'm going to hesitate on the names. Luke Zahm and, oh, God.
We're going to have to compile like a best of. You're giving me a lot of ideas from this. I want to resurrect this giant pumpkin show. I'm going to go find
it. That will be fun.
Luke Zahm.
Oh, why can't I remember? Oh, gosh. And Lars Bergen. Luke Zahm and Lars Bergen. Those two guys, I mean, together, they are smart. They're funny. They love food. And the two of them together are just, you know, very exciting. But I'm going to veer off and maybe anticipate what you're going to say, because it's kind of coming up.
Yeah, go for it. Where are we going
and
next?
And I've been talking about food, mainly cooking, for 13 years on this show. And I've interviewed, you know, 50 people a year for 13 years. I'll figure that one out. But and I kind of veered off of just cooking, just baking cookies or recipes. I got into food allergies. I got into a whole segment on the various different macronutrients and micronutrients in food. I'm just a wonderful guest, and those are still available, and they're like 15-minute segments. I think it was called Back to the Earth. And, I mean, there were a wealth of information. I learned so much. And then I've talked about, you know, different diets, you know, vegan and vegetarian and, you know, different things that are coming up. And people want to know and want to hear from somebody who went on one of these diets or food combining. And then I got interested in food issues like raw milk and what's wrong with raw milk and what's the legislation like about raw milk policy in Wisconsin. And it just... So I can't, and then I got into gardening and seeds because that's related to food, food is political, and I really, I mean, even seed growing and seed patenting and things, owning seeds, or, you know, the ownership of pollen, even if your pollen pollinates somebody that's, you know, either organic or not organic, that you could be in big trouble. I mean, I kept running into this, and so I started saying, well, why don't we have a farm show on WDRT? I mean, we're in farming area. And So between Jim and I, we came up with the idea, well, let's just do a farm show that's basically same format as Who's in the Kitchen, and just be an interviewer and get guests and maybe have a theme and begin talking about farming once a month. So that's my show is on Saturdays at noon, and then my farm show is the last Saturday of every month at noon. And I do have a little following on that. People do come and say, I really enjoyed it, or I learned a lot about that. And it is more political. I feel like a lot of things happen in the food industry, grocery stores, co-ops, things that do touch us, and a lot of that comes from the farm bill and how our tax dollars are being used to incentivize certain kinds of farming behavior and food marketing practices and things like that. Who gets insured, who doesn't, what kind of crops are encouraged to be grown. And then I got interested in, CAFOs, confined animal feed operations, and why are so many farmers moving to that model? And then now I have people who come to me and say, can I be on the show? I've got a guest that you've got to have.
That's
and
awesome.
I'm so excited. And it's hard to stay on a theme. For one thing, it's only once a month, and I'm sure people don't hear. It isn't sequential at all. It just, who happens to be available for the topic. But a friend of mine conferred with me when I was trying to figure out how to do this farm show, and he said, what am I trying to do? And he said, well, let's try to put it in the context of how farming came to be. And he did the first four shows, which were the history of farming by heart, just sitting around this round table.
That's incredible.
It was really fun, from Mesopotamia on, and then try to put farming, say, in the last 100 years or 50 years into context. And people who are living now, who've been farming for 60 or 70, 80 years, maybe had a farm in their family for, two centuries even, and want to talk about how farming has changed and for the better or worse and what we've learned and so forth. And this friend also helped me come up with the title, which was Digging Deep.
I was going to ask for the name of the show.
Isn't that great?
I mean,
absolutely, that's what it is. So it isn't just a farming show like we used to listen to for 15 minutes in the morning. They tell us how much milk was selling for and, soybeans and things like that, which is, I wanted this to be something where people go, oh, I see why this is happening. I see why, organic farming, organic products are more expensive. I thought it was just a gimmick, And then I've talked to a gentleman who is kind of a private eye for organics, and he's been on my show several times, and he's always, looking to see where people are kind of cheating on organic standards or, getting certification when they aren't really legitimate. And I mean, this can go really, really deep.
Right.
And I don't want to be judgmental, but I do want people to know, different takes on the story and understand why some decisions are made in the Farm Bill that might be kind of, I didn't even know this was in the Farm Bill. I didn't even know.
It's such important information that you're bringing to people.
So I think people who don't farm really don't have much of a connection with that anymore. And I really encourage people, food-wise and farming-wise, I'm so inspired still from Europe and other countries outside the U.S. where people have several pots or something. I mean, they just are driven toward growing some food, even if it's just a pot of, tomatoes or cucumbers or some herbs or salad greens. There's so much to learn by growing a little bit of your own food. And, of course, I've been a teacher, and I love this part of education, is having children be a part of where stuff comes from. And then you begin to understand, well, why is pollination such a big deal? We want to have pollinators, and what good are bees? And, you know, just some issues that when you begin to see where things come from, you see where it all ties in together. I love to have a holistic view in the end. So month by month, one show at a time.
You've been digging deep.
I've been digging deep. Digging
beyond deeper. Who's in the kitchen.
It has gone beyond.
I'm going to have to dig deep into the archives now to resurrect and bring this stuff up. So stay tuned for that. My mind is going. The wheels are turning. I'm excited.
Good. And you could probably help me. I used to keep my own files, and I did my own editing. But now I've kind of lost touch with that because Jim does all my, he does all my engineering, and he does all my editing, and that really makes it easy for me. I look for guests. My guests do the show. I just ask some relevant questions, and off we go.
Right. Well, you've been doing a tremendous job.
Thank you. I've loved it.
I want to switch gears a little bit and dig a little deeper into Philothea. So can you tell us, where are you from? Are you from the Driftless?
No.
How'd you end up
here? I'm not even a native.
You're not even a native.
I was born in Alabama and lived in South Carolina for a few years with my family. And then we moved to Northern Virginia, where I was raised and lived and went to high school and graduated from a huge public school in Arlington, Virginia. And then I started, I was a French major, and I went to Switzerland for a year and got my degree in teaching French as a foreign language. And I came back to the U.S. and I began teaching in a public school in the western suburbs of Cleveland. And that's where me and my husband started teaching. And then we moved to Connecticut for a few years, where I taught in a private boarding school where we lived with 18 teenage boys and ate in the cafeteria. Ooh,
that's an experience.
That was really fun. And then we found a little house with a picket fence and about 10 acres, and we just fell in love with it. We bought it, and we got into some, you know, just teeny tiny farming. I mean, chickens and a couple of goats and milking, and then we met some people who kept bees, and we started meeting people. That was when the first Mother Earth News came out, and our former boarding student boys used to come out to our little farm, and they gave us the first issue of the Mother Earth News, which I still have.
No way.
Yeah. And that just, we were just bit. We were just bit by the bug of wanting to have our own land and do things ourselves and learn about the olden ways. In those days, there weren't any folk schools that I knew of, but now there's a wonderful folk school here, I think one of the best,
yes,
where they are teaching how to do all these things. But we came out here really knowing almost nothing. We had built a rabbit hutch, and that's about it. And we built our own house. I have a picture of us standing on ladders, putting up the original stud walls of our one-room house, kind of the tiny house movement.
Yeah, before it was a thing.
But I have been here now for 54 years.
Round of applause. That's so cool. How did you hear about Wisconsin? Like, why here?
Well, because our friends that we became fast friends with, they were teachers also. We said, let's run away and buy land together.
Love
and
it.
They were from Northern Illinois. And our friend Paul he was a Spanish teacher, and he wanted to go back to school for his master's in Spanish, and he wanted to go to the UW-Wisconsin. He was familiar with Wisconsin. His grandparents lived here, and so we started looking at, you know, in a United Country real estate catalogs and seeing teeming with wildlife, you know, bobcat and raccoon and what, you know, good water, good soil. We tried to pick an area of Wisconsin that wasn't really near any kind of big city or super highway or anything, and we ended up kind of in the Driftless area, which we didn't even know was called the Driftless area in those days. I guess it was called the Cooley region, sure, southwestern Wisconsin. But when we went through Coon Valley, and then saw a sign to romance, we said, we've got to move here.
Yes, that we've
was
arrived.
Just, oh gosh, it was so fun. But it's a beautiful, beautiful area, and it is pristine, and the water is the best, and the land is so beautiful. And it's also very hilly. The Driftless area is quite hilly and wooded, and it isn't well suited to large-scale farming.
Yeah.
And we've been kind of protected that way. But anyway, there have been, you know, some really large CAFOs now, you know, exploring being in this area. So that's where I come from. And then I got here, and what we did to make money was to harvest tobacco. That was the first thing we did. We just worked for our neighbors and did that backbreaking work of harvesting tobacco. And then we went through, you know, this time of year, which is, you know, called, what's it called? Oh, when it gets really moist and you strip the tobacco off the stems. Oh, gosh, I can't remember the name of it. It'll come to me. And so then I finally, I got a little job on Main Street, at a little shop called So-and-So, and it sold fabric and sewing machines. And
that's adorable. We need to bring that back.
So-and-So, S-E-W, I know. And then I saw an ad in the paper for wanted director, cook, and aide for a new daycare center opening up. So I applied for that job. And those jobs, not knowing what, you know. And they said, well, we're going to give you a building, an old church basement, and you have to fix it up, buy the furniture, set up a playground, hire the staff, train the staff, hire a cook, plan the menu, plan the program, and get yourself certified.
Wow.
And I said, I think that would be fun. They said that's why they hired me. That's why they hired me. And it was loads of fun. So I started the Viroqua Daycare Center, and I did get a lot of training. And I got training in Piaget, which really helped me to make the daycare center into a learning place, which the parents really appreciated. And now it's called Viroqua Daycare Learning Center. I really don't know, you know, what their program is like now, but I was very taken with Piaget. And then parents asked me if I would be interested in starting a school, and I said, well, I'm trained in French, but, you know. And so we heard about Waldorf, and a friend of mine, Linda Bacon, and I went out to the Waldorf Training Institute in Southfield, Michigan. And we were very impressed with Waldorf education. We thought this would really be wonderful, and it would give us a philosophy of education that people could either come to or not be attracted to. And it was kind of, you know, head, heart, and hands. A lot of movement, a lot of art, a lot of culture, a lot of world civilizations, and a lot of hands-on work, gardening, making your own clothes, learning to do plays, learning a foreign language, playing a musical instrument. I mean, we just thought this sounded wonderful. And they said, well, you're going to have to send somebody from your own area because everybody at this institute is already spoken for. So Linda looks at me and says, well, I have two kids and you don't have any, so you're the one who gets to go. So she paid for me and continued to support the school, you know, for several years to get the school off the ground. So I came back, and with the help of a small group of parents, we opened Pleasant Ridge Waldorf School.
Wow.
And that was in 1980. And that was with three students.
Mm-hmm.
And we looked at each other, the parents, and said, are we going to start with three students? And I said, if we don't start, we'll never start. A lot of people need to see something going, and they aren't going to be drawn to it till they see what it's like and, if you know, who goes and what's really being offered. So we started with three, it grew to seven, and now I'm not sure how big it is now, but it's in a very large
There's a waiting list to get into the kindergarten, so.
Yeah, it's hundreds of students now, and we also have foreign students. Mm-hmm. Out of that grew Youth Initiative High School, and I ended up teaching French. They are finally getting to use my French after all those years. And I taught there, and I went back to Pleasant Ridge for a year and taught French there again. And then I've done home tutoring with a lot of homeschooling students, so I've gotten experience with that. And the last thing I did was start a school for my church, which is the Russian Orthodox Church, and I started a school that was a totally basic Christian curriculum, and I'm still working on that. Maybe we'll get that published.
Wow. We need to write, I think you need to write a couple books here.
I don't know.
A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, I've got pretty much the same story, which is, you know, the top quarter inch of my life, and I never get into the deep, dark details.
Well, this might not be dark, but it might be a little deep. I don't know. Switching gears. First concert.
I was thinking about that. Well, it was probably either Bob Dylan or Peter, Paul, and Mary. I was still in the Virginia area, and we had some wonderful outdoor venues. So those two people really formed my life. When we came to Madison, the first concert we went to was Joel Cocker.
Oh, wow.
Then we got to go to Jesus Christ Superstar, which I loved, and there were a few other things like that. And probably, unless you're my age, you don't really even know about this. But when we got to Wisconsin, we really didn't have any money. And I have to tell you, we bought our land for $100 an acre.
What?
Yeah. And we had those dollar bills in our hand. But for us, that was really, a fortune. And now I think we know that farmland here is selling for $7,000 to $8,000 an acre.
Oh, yeah.
And we have made great improvements on our land, but a lot of that is just, you know, the inflation of land. But we really didn't have much money. We didn't go to many concerts, and we bought a bottle of wine a year in those days and really, you know, held our car doors closed with bungee cords and things like that. I mean, we really, really were poor. And I milked goats. That's one of the things I did. We milked goats and we sold our milk to a cheese factory. We hired a cheesemaker, and I was part of the Western Wisconsin Dairy Goat Association. And so I do have a background in teeny tiny farming.
Yes. You're really such an amazing example of just making things happen. Like, not even necessarily know what you're doing, but figuring it out. Really going for it.
I know. People have asked me if I had a plan or if any of us who moved out here had a plan. And I don't think we really did have a plan. We didn't come out here to make this, you know, a really memorable place to live or something. But it has turned out to be a rural area that's very exciting. And people come here and they go, wow, you have a co-op, you have a community radio station, you have three or four alternative schools, a Christian school, and a wonderful high school. And, you know, many, many, many enterprises have started here, and then it does draw people to come. They feel inspired, and I do feel like this is a place where you can have dreams and you can try them out.
Yes.
Isn't it? Do you get that idea?
100%, yes. I mean, it's not about me, but we've moved here for very similar reasons, everything you're saying. It's a gem. It has everything you need, which really leads me to my next question. If someone's coming to visit, what is your favorite place to take them, or what are some of your must-dos?
People are amazed that when I brag about Viroqua, there's only two blocks of it.
I know.
It's not that big. We have some really interesting restaurants, and I love to take people to the various little enterprises. We also have, you know, the regular old, you know, franchise restaurants. We got them several years ago. We've got a Walmart. We've got a, you know, a several farm supply mills. But I think it is very impressive to see our food co-op. I mean, that has really impressed a lot of people. And that I saw the beginning of that food co-op, and I've been a part of other food co-ops that started up. I was a signing up member of the founding of the Gays Mills Food Co-op, which is called the Kickapoo Exchange, and that still exists.
Yeah.
It still exists. So I've been interested in food and cooking and farming and those kinds of things. some people have asked me to see Amish country, and that's really fun to take people. And, you know, a lot of times you don't really get to see Amish. You get to go in their shops and there's nobody there.
Right.
But it's just beautiful. I love to just tour the different, you know, during the different seasons of the year and just see when they've put up their oats or they put up their corn and, you know, done it in the old-fashioned way. And it just, our landscape is just so beautiful. So I love that. We have a darling, beautiful, reverent church and convent and retreat center down near Gays Mills called St. Francis Hermitage. Mm. And the nuns there serve the most wonderful French food. So I, of course, was attracted to that and attracted to speaking French with the service people there. And so that's a wonderful place to go for breakfast or a wonderful, really gourmet meal. And some friends of mine called me last year. They live up in northern Wisconsin. They said, we're taking our wedding anniversary and coming to Viroqua. And I said, why? And they said, well, we want to stay in the Hotel Fortney.
Oh, yeah, it's so lovely.
That is a place I want to show people. That was a building that was about to be torn down. It was kind of neat old architecture, but it had just no one had been really had the money or the vision to do anything with it. And it really, I think it was, you know, just about to hit the chopping block. And then this wonderful family, and I'll have to, you know, fill in the credits to who did this, but they did believe in Viroqua, and they believed in that wonderful old building, and they restored it to, you know, it just a glorious, wonderful destination place. Beautifully restored. And I know the cost of windows and doors. I mean, they replaced everything and, you know, air conditioning and just beautiful facilities everywhere. And what attached to that is our little shops and then the Noble Rind, which is one of our favorite little places to go get light meals and coffee. And then down the street, it's turned West Court Street into a destination.
Absolutely.
Bookstores, music stores, and the Driftless Cafe. And so that's, I love to show people that. Of course, I like to show people Paper, Scissors, Stone, which is my business that I bought. I bought it from a dear friend who had passed away, and I was afraid the business was going to go out of business. It's really an art and school supply business, originally founded for Waldorf schools. And it just almost went out of business, and I thought, well, you know, I got a little inheritance. I could buy this, and we can kind of keep it going. And it is doing so well. I mean, it serves the United States and beyond. We have a website.
Yes, and I've ordered from it. It's lovely.
Oh, it's great. And I have great little staff that's, you know, really done a lot, you know, on the website and, you know, making it accessible to people using a phone. I mean, I'm learning all kinds of stuff. But my manager said, I love managing a store I don't own. And I said, I love owning a store I don't manage. So together we work well. And that's really another nice little place. And then it's basically a little warehouse. But we do sell our merchandise over at Utopia. And I love to take people to Utopia. The founder of that business was a graduate of Youth Initiative High School, and she got her business degree, and she came and opened a wonderful store where Felix's department store used to be. And it's just an aesthetic place to go. They're beautiful fibers, and she buys from local people, and she acquires just the best as she draws. She makes patterns and sells them. She has classes. It's a destination to go to. Bring your lunch and learn how to knit or crochet. A darling play area for children, and then she also has let Paper, Scissors, Stone and Pleasant Ridge School have little displays and sales areas for their products. And that way, there's a shop that's open at regular store hours where you can buy those things. So that's, I've just watched the downtown really grow, and I was just at one of the soup events. Our Chamber of Commerce is really, really hopping now, and there's so many events that you can get on their newsletter and find out their calendar and find out what's happening. But soup is bringing people together to listen to ideas of people that have a project they'd like to start in the community, and they need a little starter money. So you pay money, you get a bowl of soup and a piece of bread, and then you hear pitches from two, three, or four groups, and then you vote. Takes about an hour and a half to do the whole thing, and then they get the kitty. The winner gets the kitty. That soup event has grown to standing room only. We keep looking for a bigger and bigger place to hold it, and it is incredible. So wonderful to listen to the events and projects that people have. They're all quite worthwhile, and it's too bad they can't all be winners at the same time. But, you know, a little Shakespeare festival is growing every year, a book and writer festival, which mm-hmm. sounds fabulous and is definitely going to grow every year. And just many neat projects. And also, I always have to brag about the Vernon, Food Enterprise Center, which is founded by Sue Noble. And she is just a private person who made a private organization, which really is not a government-funded thing, which is providing space in an old abandoned building, remodeled for any business that has to do with food. And so she has, well, I don't know, there's probably 20 businesses in this building now, which include the coffee business, physiology. It used to be Wisco Pop. I think there might still be a pop place there, organic cosmetics, and then there are several enterprises for receiving food and distributing food, from the gardens to then processors and people who will distribute this food to schools and nursing homes and things like that. I mean, it is a wonderful brainchild. Vernon Economic Development, VEDA, Economic Development Association. So I like to tell people about that. And
I think you could be the Viroqua ambassador. I think I'm nominating you. The chamber needs to put you in some kind of position to spread the word of how wonderful Viroqua is. I can just feel the love that you have
for this area.
And thank you.
I really, really do appreciate the Chamber of Commerce, how much they have been doing and really listening to what's going on here and incorporating it. Yeah, we have a blues festival in the summer. We have a harvest festival in the fall with giant puppets like you would only see in Minneapolis or Chicago.
Right.
I mean, you just go, wow, there's so much creativity out here and so much community involvement.
Yes, the community here I feel is unparalleled.
Yeah, are we kind of bragging about this place?
I think we are. Yeah, sorry, there's no more room at the inn, though. We're at capacity. No,
well,
just kidding.
I hope that we are an example to other small towns. Instead of us getting bigger and huger and kind of losing kind of the small town feeling we have, there's other towns that can do this, and some really are working toward that. And one of my friends said, we didn't plan to do this, but we have made a town worth for our children to see it's worth coming back to.
Absolutely.
A lot of little towns have just lost their luster, and the kids don't ever want to return. And I think that's very sad. But there is a new movement now. People want to take their kids where they're safe, where they can ride a bike to school and to the library and the swimming pool. And so just to kind of create a space like that where people can move to, I think that would be better than trying to just have us just grow and grow and grow.
Yes.
Although we are kind of, you know, bursting at the seams. We hardly have any housing available here anymore.
I know.
But Biola has a new housing development, and there are other, programs that are encouraging small towns to develop some affordable housing.
Keyword,
yeah,
affordable.
Affordable in a small town setting that's safe and desirable and, you know, has a little grocery store and Library. We have wonderful libraries.
It won best library of the year last year.
Verroca won the best. And believe me, they're all terrific. Lafarge, Viola, Reedstown, Soldiers Grove, and Gay's Mills. And Verroca won the prize. And they're all wonderful, wonderful. So, and we have a little library, you know, mobile that goes around and visits people, and you can borrow books from that. So we have a lot going for us, including the radio station.
Including the radio station, last but not least, this amazing radio station. I've got one last question for you. What about you would surprise people? I don't know if there's anything more that to share that you haven't already shared, but is there anything that people would be like, huh, really?
Well, I used to be a motorcycle rider.
Oh!
I used to drive my motorcycle to school and back and forth, and then...
Would not have guessed that.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
That is going to conclude my interview today for the Volunteer Spotlight series here on WDRT, Philothea. Thank you for taking the time to chat with us. I learned so much.
Oh, thank you. You can see that I'm not at a loss for words.
No, I'm glad I chose you as the first one. You made this really easy.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Emily.